Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, past archive programs. You can certainly check it out there. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you?
Doing great.
Hope you're having a wonderful Monday.
So far, about to get a lot better,
so
though.
So far,
it's
gonna
be a great show today.
Well, good. Let's tell the audience again what's going on as far as the radio show today. And, of course, if you have any questions or would like to chime in, weigh in, you can certainly do that on our text line at 806-745-5800 along the way. But what do we got in store?
Well, super excited to have a special guest today, Neil Z. Miller. Yes,
okay.
He is the author, along with co-author Gary Goldman, Ph.D., the author of Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies. So we're going to talk about studies, lots of scientific studies today. And I want to start with, because I know this is can be a hot topic, emotional topic, vaccines. The point of the show, You're the Cure, is to educate you on how to steward your health so that your body can do what it's designed to do, which is be healthy and fix itself when it's not healthy. Your body has the cure. Doctors have symptom management techniques, and there are risks and benefits with symptom management techniques. And if you are fully informed and you decide the benefit outweighs the risk and you want to just treat a symptom, then great, do that. It's all about freedom of choice and informed consent. So physicians need to be highly educated in the risk and the benefits in order to educate their patient so that the patient can make an informed decision. And I've admitted before, and I'll admit again here today, I was not highly educated when it came to the studies on vaccine benefit and risk. I'll just tell you that right now. Medical school did not educate me well in that, nor did internship or residency, and therefore I could not pass on that knowledge to my patients prior to recommending the vaccines, because I just was ignorant. I didn't know. And of course, and I think I've told this story before, of our six kids, our first kiddos were fully vaccinated and our last couple are not, because my education has changed along the way. But what really led me down this path were patients. As I switched my practice from a traditional conventional family practice in Post, Texas, to a more integrative functional medicine approach, I did that because of chronic diseases that weren't getting better in my patients, like diabetes and high blood pressure and reflux and stuff like that. And the integrative functional approach, I saw much better results in those adult patients with chronic disease. But then I started attracting young families and young parents, moms in particular, who were coming in with their babies and their kids, and they were asking very, very pointed questions about, to me, wanting me to give answers, educated answers, on the safety and efficacy of the CDC's vaccination schedule, the recommended routine vaccination schedule. I didn't have those answers, and it appeared that these moms were more educated than me on this topic, so that forced me to kind of go get educated. And in fact, there's a whole lot of education to be had. There's many, many, many studies. And that's what I love about Neil Miller's book. It's a review of 400 important scientific papers. And he summarized it in a manner for parents, but also for doctors and researchers to be able to look at. So it's kind of this encyclopedia of 400 studies. So we're going to get into some of those today. But so that's our guest. And I'm super excited because, again, we're all about informed consent and educating folks so they can decide. That bottom line, that's it. That's what we're about, and that's what Neil Miller's about, too. So real quick, a little bio on Mr. Miller. He's a medical research journalist, and he's the director of Think Twice Global Vaccine Institute, which is thinktwice.com is the website. He has devoted the past 30 years to educating parents and health practitioners about vaccines and encouraging informed consent. So as you can see, he lines up perfectly with the point of this show and for sure with this topic today. So, Neil Miller, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ben Edwards. I appreciate the opportunity to share information with your listeners.
Well, and we'll have a lot to share, so we're going to dive right in. But I first want to start with give our listeners a little bit of background. I know because I listened to your talk at the Weston A. Price Conference, the Wise Traditions Conference. I forgot to mention Neil gave a couple of presentations there. And I believe you got into this topic just as a concerned parent. You wanted to be informed before you decided to give permission to vaccinate your children. But I want you to tell your story, a little bit of how you got to where you are today, so the listeners have an idea.
Oh, yeah. When my wife was pregnant, I felt that I had an obligation, a responsibility to research vaccines to determine whether this was something we were going to do when our first baby was born. Now, I do have to say, though, that my wife and I generally believed that there were going to be problems with the vaccines because of some initial research that I had done. But I had started looking at this was over 30 years ago. I started reading. I had to go to the medical journals. You couldn't just look things up on the Internet at that time. I had to go to medical libraries to look up data in the medical journals, and I started collecting and researching information about vaccines, and I was just astounded at how much information was being kept from the general public. But if you went to the actual journals, in the journals themselves, you would find that there were many studies showing that vaccines were unsafe and ineffective in many different ways. And so I just started to gather that information and organize that information, and my wife and I decided that we were not going to vaccinate our children. And then people started to come to me and ask about the information that I had, and I started to share, and everything snowballed from there. It started to be organized into books, and now I've written several books about vaccines. I document everything in my books. My books is not about my opinions about things. My book is my books summarize the actual data that's in the medical studies. By the way, my wife and I, we also had home births, so our children were not born in the hospital. They were born at home. I was the first one to catch my children when they were born, to introduce them to the world, and we really did not even use medical doctors when our children were young. They rarely got sick, and if they did, we used holistic health practitioners We did everything we could everything possible to avoid dealing with the allopathic medical industry, because through my research we've also discovered that there were just a lot of issues associated with the medical practice. So
right, well, and I'm glad you've stated all that, and I always tell people that everyone has a bias, including myself, but every researcher has a bias. You have a bias. Every human being has some sort of bias, even if you think you're not biased. You are biased. And obviously, you and your wife had a natural bent already, but what I love about your book is, like you just said, it's not your opinion. It's literally a summary, including the citation, the name of the study, the citation, quotes from it, bullet points from it, so people can go look up the studies themselves. And it's literally like an encyclopedia, just study after study after study after study, and it's just the summary, basically, of the studies. So it's not...
Well, this latest book, Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies, you're the perfect candidate for this book,
right?
Okay. Because you're a doctor that, you know, we've heard from so many doctors that they just don't get enough education in medical school about vaccines, and they're inundated with information from the CDC and the FDA and from the World Health Organization, and they're only getting half of the information that's out there. Now, I put this book together specifically for not just parents but for medical doctors, so that they could have access to this information and they could start being able to truly educate their patients.
Right. Well, I'm so thankful for it. I highly recommend it. Every doctor, or nurse practitioner, resident, medical student that comes to me, I recommend that your book is a place to start to try to get more informed. Because really, in med school, thinking back, and my memory could be off. I've been out of med school for 18 years. But all I can recall is the CDC schedule, like that nice colorful chart that we had to memorize it basically to know what ages you gave what vaccines. The instruction was basically, here's the recommended schedule, memorize it, it'll be on the test, and then when you're in your clinical setting, you know, administer these.
The thing that I discovered about the CDC's recommended schedule is that it's actually not based on science. It's not evidence-based. Okay, for example, children in the United States receive more vaccines than children in any other country in the world. And they receive a hepatitis B vaccine at birth at the hospital within 24 hours. They're being given a hepatitis B vaccine, even though they're not at risk. Excuse me. they're not at risk of contracting that disease. And then at 2 months of age, babies receive 8 vaccines. At 4 months of age, they receive 8 additional vaccines. And then at 6 months of age, they receive 9 vaccines if they follow the CDC's recommended immunization schedule. Now, these vaccines contain high concentrations of aluminum. In my book, there's a chapter on aluminum adjuvants. There are about 20 to 25 different studies that are summarized in that book that are confirming that these aluminum adjuvants are very dangerous for children and adults. They cause neurological and immunological disorders, and that's only part of the problem. The CDC never studied the schedule in mass. The individual vaccines were studied individually. Okay, they had to go through clinical trials to pass. The FDA had to give their okay for them to pass, and then the CDC is the organization that decides whether they're going to be certified or recommended for all children in the nation. But the CDC never did a study to see if the vaccines within the combinations in which they're given are safe. And there's something called synergistic toxicity. And in fact, I did a study with Dr. Gary Goldman. Dr. Gary Goldman worked for the CDC for 7.5 years. Okay, and he and I worked on a couple of studies together, and in one of those studies, we were able to show that there were no safety or efficacy studies ever conducted by the CDC to confirm that immunization, the infant immunization schedule, is safe. And in fact, our study showed that when babies receive multiple vaccines concurrently, at the same time, that they are statistically significantly more likely to be hospitalized or die after they receive those vaccines. Babies that receive 8 vaccines concurrently are more likely to have adverse health consequences than babies that receive 7, 6, 5, 4, or 3 vaccines at the same time. And babies that receive 6 or 7 vaccines at the same time are statistically significantly more likely to have adverse health consequences than babies that receive fewer vaccines. So the schedule was not only not tested by the CDC or any other health organization around the world, but it's actually dangerous, that we've shown with our study and other studies that I summarize in my books.
Right. And I want to back up just a little bit so people understand if they're totally new to this topic. The thought here, I guess, and maybe it was a good thought originally, if you can basically take a little bit of a virus or bacteria and chop it up to make it inactivated or kill it, basically, or some way change it so that it can't actually infect you. But the thought of chopping up a little virus, mixing it with some sterile saline water or something, and then injecting it into you, so that little tiny chopped up virus, your body will see it, make antibodies to it, and you'll be protected against that virus. That thought, that's a decent thought, maybe. although we'll talk later in the show how there's benefit to getting these childhood illnesses. But just let's stick with that thought. The problem with that, one problem is that sterile water and a little bit of virus chopped into it, it does not elicit a strong enough of a reaction by the body's immune system. It's just too weak of a process. So they have to add things to the to that mix called adjuvants, and that's the aluminum that Neil's talking about. So we have to add things to it that will cause the body to respond, kind of agitate the immune system enough to cause it to make these antibodies. That's number one. And then number two, if you've got a vial of this virus and sterile water type stuff, and you stick a needle in it to draw some up to give that shot, well, now it's no longer sterile. So you've got to add a sterilizer to that vaccine to keep it sterile, to keep bacteria from growing, and that's mercury. That's the reason they would add mercury into it. Now, you could do single-dose vials where it's a one dose and you're done, so you don't need the antibacterial agent in there, the antiseptic in there, mercury. And they do that some. That is available some. But I think, Neil, you talked about in your presentation, it costs 15 cents a dose to do it that way. It's better to put 10 doses in one bottle and draw it up multiple times with multiple needle sticks to save money.
Look, this is just absurd that this is even acceptable in our society today, that vaccines, many of the childhood vaccines contained mercury as an antimicrobial agent. So you're absolutely right about that. It's basically, when the manufacturer produces a vaccine, they can put one dose into one vial, and then you don't need mercury. But it's cheaper for the manufacturer to put 10 doses into one vial, and then the doctor gets it, and he has to put he or she has to put 10 needles into it, and so they use mercury as an antimicrobial agent. Now, mercury, again, in my book, there's a chapter in there on thimerosal, which is mercury. That's the agent that they're putting in there as an antimicrobial agent, and there's over 200 studies from scientific institutions around the world, published in prestigious medical journals, showing that the type of mercury that's put into vaccines is dangerous. It's a neurological toxin, and they took it out of several of the childhood vaccines. But when they did that, they simultaneously made two new recommendations. When they took mercury out, it was 1999. From 1999. The public health, the United States took, in 1999, the United States decided that they were going to take mercury out. They were going to phase it out. They gave the manufacturers 3 years to continue using up the original stock. So they had acknowledged that it was dangerous or potentially dangerous, but they still gave the manufacturers 3 years to use up the existing stock. So by 2002, most of the mercury was out of the childhood vaccines. But then the CDC made two new recommendations. One was that pregnant women must now begin receiving mercury-laced influenza vaccines. So they never took it out of influenza vaccines, and they made a new recommendation that pregnant women in all trimesters, first, second, third trimester, must begin receiving influenza vaccine during pregnancy. At that time, they were not splitting it up into single doses, so nearly all of those vaccines that these pregnant women were receiving, and today as well, 80% of all the vaccines today that pregnant women are receiving when they receive an influenza vaccine contains mercury. They're giving these pregnant women mercury. That mercury passes through the placenta to the baby in utero. Okay, and then the second thing that the CDC did was that they made a recommendation that infants must now begin receiving an influenza vaccine. They never used to have that recommendation. So now babies at 6 months are told at 6 and 7 months of age to get two doses of the influenza vaccine. Again, most of the vials contain the mercury. So what's going on now? What's happening is that a woman's pregnant. She gets shot up with a mercury containing influenza vaccine. She's also told that she needs to get a pertussis vaccine, the DTaP vaccine, or the TDAP, okay, which contains aluminum. So the pertussis, she's pregnant, so she gets a mercury laced influenza vaccine, and she's getting an aluminum a pertussis vaccine that contains an aluminum adjuvant. The aluminum and the mercury are passing to the infant in utero, and then when that baby's born, that baby receives hepatitis B vaccines that contain aluminum. pneumococcal vaccines that contain aluminum. This is at 2, 4, and 6 months of age, okay? And there's a HIP vaccine contains aluminum, and the hepatitis A vaccine contains aluminum. So the babies are getting shot up with heavy metals, and then at 6 and 7 months of age, that infant, if the parents are following the CDC's recommended immunization schedule, are receiving 2 more doses of mercury-laced influenza vaccines. So our babies are being shot up with these heavy metals, and we have an explosion of all sorts of neurological disorders and various neuropsychiatric disabilities, and the vaccines have been linked to multiple different types of neurological and immunological disorders. Right. And I summarize many of these studies in my books. And parents need to wake up. They need to realize that this is happening, and they need to take control and take charge of their the health decisions that are being made in their families' lives. Yep. But right now, everybody is being bullied by the World Health Organization, the CDC, and the FDA, and we're being told that we have to be vaccinated, and that it's not a choice that we should be able to be made.
Right.
And, you know, so we're in a really bad predicament right now.
I agree. I've got patients, and again, that's what drove me to this, patients asking questions. So if someone comes in and says, I have a baby due in March, should I get, should I follow the CDC's recommended schedule? Well, the nightly news, the local news, newspapers, you know, CDC, World Health Organization representatives, various government agency representatives, they're saying one thing, like vaccines are safe and effective, and it's just this generic line. But then when you really press on it, okay, where are the studies that show the hepatitis vaccination with aluminum on day of life one, when the blood-brain barrier doesn't develop till about a week later, and a dose of aluminum in that vaccine is equivalent to what, a safety-wise, a 200-pound man would be able to tolerate, not a 6-pound baby. But show the studies, and they don't, or they're not there. You can't find those, but then there are numerous studies. As you said a while ago, nobody studied the synergistic effect. When you add all these different vaccines together as a group, did someone study that prior to them being introduced to the market? And they did not. So therefore, we have to look at studies looking retrospectively. After it's been introduced, it's been out there for 10 years or 20 years or whatever, can we look back and do some review of the medical literature? Can we look at hospitalization rates? Can we look at disease rates? Can we make any kind of corollary? And that's the point of your book. At one point in your presentation, 165 different studies in just on mercury that show some negative effect. There was a increased speech and sleep disorders, increased autism. That was a 1999 study by, I think it was Tom Versiden, who used to be the head epidemiologist of the CDC. There's a study that in your book showing increased odds of pervasive developmental delay, 9 times more developmental delay with Hep B. I mean, there's study after study. DTaP.
That study that you mentioned, though, Verstraeten study, yeah, I summarized that in my book. It was by Dr. Tom Verstraeten. Let's just bring this to the attention of your listeners, because it's very important, that Verstraeten study. That was a study conducted by the CDC's head epidemiologist. This is the epidemiologist that works for the CDC. They commissioned him to conduct this study to look at whether or not mercury in childhood vaccines is related to neurological disorders. The CDC's own team of scientists, headed up by Dr. Tom Verstraeten, the lead epidemiologist with the CDC, they found, after they did their study, they found that mercury in childhood vaccines causes a 7.6% increase, not 7.6%, greater risk of contracting autism. But what they did is, in that study, they looked at it, they gave babies a vaccine that contained no mercury, and then they had other babies that received the same identical vaccine with mercury. And then they ran the numbers, and what they discovered was the babies that received the vaccine with mercury were 6.6 times more likely to eventually be diagnosed with autism. That's the study that the CDC conducted that confirmed that mercury in childhood vaccines is actually linked to autism. And it's related to the autism epidemic in our country and around the world. Now, what did the CDC do after they conducted that study? Well, they buried it. They said, we don't like these results. This is implicating us because we're the ones that are supposed to be looking after the health and welfare of our nation's children. And we're going to look bad. And this is going to, and with the help of, I believe with the help of Congress, really, they buried this study because I think if they acknowledge the damage that's been done and the link between vaccines and autism, then there would be compensation and liability that would be involved, and it would bankrupt our nation if we ever acknowledged that, if it was ever admitted. And so they're pretending like this doesn't exist, like it doesn't take place. So they say to everybody that mercury is safe in vaccines. We're 20 years past that study. That study was conducted in actually 1998. In 1999. The abstract of that study was presented at a scientific conference, and then it was buried. I have the abstract. If people go to my website at thinktwice.com, they can actually access the original abstract that documents what actually took place in that study conducted by the CDC. So the point of this is that the CDC conducted their own study that confirmed that vaccines cause autism, and then they buried it. And now they're lying to the American people and lying to the world. And they're continuing to harm children and adults with mercury-laced vaccines. Yeah. That's where we're at today.
Yep.
And they're telling us that we don't have a choice. Parents don't have a choice whether or not they want to vaccinate their children. And now they're also making it legal for children in school to supposedly be able to make their own decisions about whether or not they want to receive vaccines. And they're encouraging these children. We're talking about kids, 9, 10, 11. We're talking middle school children, middle school and high school children. They're telling them that they should be able to make their own medical decisions, and they should keep those decisions away from their parents. They shouldn't allow their parents to become aware that they're starting to vaccinate them in the public school systems without the parents' consent. And this is where we're heading. It's a very dark, dystopian view of where things are going, but this is the reality that we're living in today.
Yeah, and at the bare minimum, again, informed consent, and I agree, kids aren't of the mindset to be able to make a logical, clear choice usually. I mean, some kids maybe, but you've got to fully inform them and inform parents, like we said at the top of the show. So if we knew there are 180-plus studies that show there can be pervasive developmental delay and speech disorder and sleep disorder and autism and autoimmune disease, then, we need to know that to weigh the risk and benefit. If we knew that delaying these vaccines by even a couple of months, so older infants are at less risk than younger infants. If we knew we could get a mercury-free vaccination, a single-dose vial that didn't have the mercury in it, then we could choose that. So there's ways to choose to diminish and decrease your risk. There's a pediatrician in Portland, very busy pediatrician, and basically he has a customized schedule that he would recommend or offer his patients for those who still want to get the vaccination and they're informed. They delay or they customize. They only pick one or two, or they pick mercury-free. There's different ways to do it is my point, and including none at all. But it's all about getting the information, getting the education out there. We're up against a break, but when we come back, we want to touch on the aluminum a little more, specifically the autoimmune syndrome induced by adjuvants. Autoimmunity is rampant, even in kids. It's weekly we're diagnosing a young lady, it seems like, I just had one last week, with autoimmunity to her thyroid. And I read a study that 25% of girls under age 25 in America now have antibodies to their thyroid. So there's this huge uptick, not only in neurological disorders, behavioral disorders, but this autoimmune syndrome. And then we also want to touch on efficacy, and that means, does it work? Does the pertussis, the whooping shot cough, work? Does the flu shot work? Does the chickenpox shot work? And the answer could be, yeah, chickenpox works in as much as it decreases the number of kids that have chickenpox. But the whole reason chickenpox vaccine was allowed to come onto market was because it was going to decrease the cost to society. Because when a kid has chickenpox, they're out of school for a week, so the parents are out of work for a week, and there's just this burden, a financial burden on society. So therefore, we approve the chickenpox vaccine because we know that chickenpox is not typically a very harmful illness. We all got it when we were kids, no big deal. But what happened was unintended consequences. Shingles rates have skyrocketed since the administration of the chickenpox vaccine. And so now adults are out of work, and the overall healthcare cost and burden, shingles can be much more of a problem to get over medically and cost much more money. And that's what the studies show. So we need to know these things. And we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about, you know, what are they doing and seeing in Europe and Japan and some of these other places. So anyways, a lot to cover. So stick with us. We are talking with Neil Miller and his book, Miller's Review of 400 Different Important Scientific Papers. Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies is the name of the book. Think Twice is the website. So y'all go check out the website, check out the book, and stick with us. We'll be right back and talking with more with Neil Miller.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Veritas Medical, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, you can catch it all right there at Veritas Medical. And, of course, let me get back into it with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, if you have a question along the way, 806-745-5800, you can call or text that right in to the program.
All right, we're so happy to have Neil Miller with us. We'll get right back at it. Neil Miller's website, thinktwice.com, his book, Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies, and he has other books too. And the point of the show today is to educate and give informed consent and give you resources to go get educated so you can make the best choices, healthiest choices for your families. Neil talked about at the top of the show, infant mortality rates are the highest in the countries with the highest vaccination rates. Now, does that absolutely mean the vaccines are killing babies or causing diseases that kill babies and give us the highest infant mortality? No, that's called a correlation study, not causation. But what a correlation study should do is prompt you to ask more questions and design more studies to go try to figure that out. There's other studies that show increased hospitalizations and increased adverse reactions the younger the age you are when you have the vaccine. There's other studies that show increasing rates of adverse reactions if you give three vaccines instead of two, or you give four over instead of three, or five instead of four. And as you go up to the eight that's recommended for a two-month-old, you get a corresponding increase in adverse reactions. So there's enough correlation evidence, and then there's enough more causation evidence at the minimum to raise eyebrows and say we need to study a whole lot more. But what we're learning today is the whole lot more actually has been studied quite a bit. There's many, 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 even hundreds of studies that have looked deeper and looked even at causation, not just correlation. And that's what, unfortunately, the research guys and the medical guys aren't communicating well, because the medical guys only communicate with the curriculum, the professors in med school that teach the curriculum, and the curriculum committees come up with the curriculum. And so somewhere we're missing communication, and therefore the patient needs to and the patient's parents need to take the responsibility upon themselves to educate themselves. I've told everyone I only got 2 hours of nutrition in 4 years of medical school, so don't ask a doctor nutrition questions, because they're not the expert of that. They don't know, because they weren't trained. A doctor's really smart because he got into med school, but then he's taught and trained in a certain manner, and he will go practice in the way he was taught and trained. So if you're not taught and trained that acupuncture could actually provide enough anesthesia so you could go through a gallbladder surgery or acupuncture could treat an asthma attack, then you would never recommend acupuncture for an asthma attack if you weren't taught that, if you didn't know that, if you didn't read the studies, if you didn't see that. So we've got to get some context here. When you see a doctor come on the news or any spokesperson come on the news and say vaccines are safe and effective, get it. Flu shots are safe and effective, get it. None of these cause autism. That's been proven. Don't ask those questions. You know, these just blanket answers, that's a red flag. We're past that. The VAERS vaccine adverse report of vaccine adverse event reporting system. This is a system put in place by the government that doctors are supposed to report these adverse reactions. I didn't even know this thing existed, even though by law I was required to report these adverse reactions. I didn't know that. I was ignorant of that. But there is this system in place, and this system is actually paid out upwards of $4 billion, I believe. Don't quote me on that. Neil may know it. The point is, there are injuries. We've paid out billions to injured kids and adults. So we're past that. We're way past that. We're now, we should be to the point of, okay, what's causing the injury? Is there a way to mitigate that? Is there a way to reduce the risk of that? Is there a way we can get this risk so low of injury that the benefit could outweigh the risk? The benefit of the vaccine could be higher than the risk. Can we get there? That's where we should be having conversations. And until we do have these serious conversations and put studies together and change the recommendations and alter the way we do things, we need to protect kids at the minimum by informing the patients and the parents so they can decide. So again, that's what we're doing today. So Neil, I don't know if that elicited any comment from you. If not, I want to jump into efficacy. Does the whooping cough shot work? Does the flu shot work? Do any of these shots work?
Let's talk about pertussis then.
Okay.
Pertussis is a very serious disease when it's contracted by infants. And scientists created a vaccine. It's been around for a very long time, and originally it was called a whole cell pertussis vaccine, and it was very reactive, which means that it was causing, it was relatively effective initially when it was introduced in lowering the number of cases of pertussis in children that received that vaccine. But it was causing, again, that was causing neurological disorders. It was causing brain damage and other very, very serious problems. And in many cases, it was actually killing babies. And so they went to what they thought was going to be a more safe vaccine. It was what they called the acellular pertussis vaccine, in contrast to the whole cell pertussis vaccine. Well, this vaccine apparently wasn't as effective as vaccines. And also, what they've discovered in the studies is that the over time, when you give a vaccine again and again, that microorganism that's being targeted by the vaccine eventually learns to adapt. And this is an evolutionary type of adaptation. And it mutates away from the vaccine. And, again, in my book, Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies, there's a chapter in there called Pertussis Mutations. It's a chapter that's got about 25 different studies that are summarized showing that the vaccine is no longer very effective, the pertussis vaccine, because the way that the vaccine is made and the microorganism, the Bordetella pertussis microorganism that's being targeted, the microorganism has actually adapted away from the vaccine, so that the vaccine is no longer actually targeting the wild form of the pertussis microorganism that's responsible for and is linked to whooping cough. Now, we're being told in the mass media, and by the way, the media is really shirking their responsibility. They're no longer doing any kind of investigative research. All they're doing is mimicking what they've been told by the World Health Organization, the FDA, the CDC, and other health authorities. But they're not really doing a job of sifting through the data and actually researching what's going on within the studies. So they're mimicking. They're telling parents, we're being told that parents are irresponsible if they don't vaccinate their kids. But what we're not being told, and they're being told that parents that choose to not vaccinate their children are irresponsible. They're not living up to their social responsibilities. That, you know, supposedly it's their fault that there's these outbreaks of disease. But that's not the truth. The truth is, and the truth can be found in the studies. In the studies, the truth is shown, and that is that the vaccine is no longer very effective because the microorganism has adapted away from the vaccine itself. And I'll tell you, about microorganisms. Microorganisms actually, and they're more, and the mutations, by the way, are more severe. And that's what happens, is that if you target a microorganism, and what happens in the vaccinated populations, that microorganism needs to overcome the vaccine, so it actually develops into a more dangerous, a more virulent strain.
Right, kind of around here, the farmers understand Roundup Ready cotton is king around here, so they spray the Roundup on the cotton, but over time these weeds grow resistant. So the weak weeds will die easily with Roundup, but then hardier, tougher to kill weeds start to emerge, and Roundup doesn't work at all. So same thing with pertussis.
That's exactly what's going on within the world of microorganisms. And when you continue to vaccinate, the vaccinated populations are like small manufacturers for more virulent mutations of that microorganism. And that's what's happening. So now the pertussis, and also if you target the children, see, it's mostly the children that are being vaccinated against pertussis. So what happens is the microorganism not only becomes more virulent, but it starts skipping into other populations. So it jumps from the child population to the adolescent and adult populations, where we have new problems that didn't exist during the pre-vaccine era. So there's multiple problems that we're creating with these vaccines.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you brought up with the chickenpox vaccine. Chickenpox was a relatively innocuous disease. They gave that vaccine. It was relatively effective at reducing the number of cases of chickenpox. But what it did, what it also did was increased the number of cases of shingles. Shingles is a very severe disease. It's very painful. And as you pointed out, it's more expensive than treating chickenpox. So that with the vaccines, we're creating constant cycles of new diseases where we've got a problem. Like what they did with the chickenpox is they had a problem. They said, we want to solve this problem that with chickenpox being rampant. They gave the chickenpox vaccine, and it caused increased cases of shingles.
And so, I want to talk real quick on the way it does that is, obviously, I think everyone knows shingles is just a reemergence of the chickenpox virus later in life. And used to, we would only see it in the old folks, you know, when you're in your 70s or something and your immune system kind of gets weak, then shingles could come, and it was fairly rare, but definitely just in the older population. Now, of course, we're seeing it across all age groups. And what they're showing is that, but the natural occurrence of chickenpox throughout the community before the vaccine came, when all these kids would get chickenpox every year, it would just naturally come in your community. So you'd run into it, you didn't know it, at church, at the post office, at the grocery store, wherever, you just come across it. It's like a natural booster every year. You're getting
right.
This natural booster shot, and that would keep your body very honed in on this virus and able to keep it in check so that you wouldn't get shingles. That virus in you would stay in hibernation, basically, because you're having this nice natural booster every year by being exposed, and now we don't have that. Kids don't get chickenpox, the adults don't get this exposure, and their immune systems are being onslaughted by a number of things to weaken your immune system, and then boom, shingles comes more readily.
Well, you know, and on that note, I also want to mention with measles, we've got a similar issue. Why is the measles vaccine no longer that effective? Well, one of the reasons is because the vaccine reduced a lot of the cases of measles. It was relatively effective initially in reducing cases of measles in people that got that vaccine, but through its effectiveness, it took away the wild measles from society. So the vaccinated and non-vaccinated are no longer being exposed to the wild measles, which was necessary to boost the efficacy of the vaccine. See, they don't talk about that. See, what I'm saying is that initially when the measles vaccine came out, it was much more effective. The efficacy rate of that measles vaccine was much higher when it came out. But one of the reasons it was much higher was because everyone that got vaccinated went out into society and they were being exposed to the wild measles that was still out there. Now, that was effective when, let's say, vaccination rates were 10% or 20%. They're up to 50%. So if you have 50% of the population vaccinated and 50% is not vaccinated, that means you still got measles, wild measles, circulating in society, which served the purpose of to actually boost the efficacy of the vaccine itself, okay? But now that we've got measles vaccination rates of 90, 95%, that's no longer taking place. Plus, the measles is also, the strain of measles has mutated away. And so now the wild strains no longer match the vaccine. And that's the dirty, one of the dirty little secrets that that they're not telling us. You have to go into the medical literature and read it like I did. If you go back to 2015 when we had outbreaks in California at Disneyland where they were saying, you know, there's a problem here, we're having outbreaks, and they're trying to blame it on unvaccinated people. Well, part of the problem was that the vaccine's no longer effective. They're giving two doses of this vaccine, and originally they said we only need one dose to protect you for life. And then they said, well, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, they said, well, that's not true. We have to give two doses now. Now they're considering three or four doses because the vaccine is so ineffective. But not only that, if you go back to all those cases of measles that took place in Disneyland in 2015, what they found is that 37% of those cases, they had the signature. They can isolate what kind of a strain that is causing the disease. 37% of those cases were related to the vaccine itself. Okay, right. Yeah. And what that means is that 37% of those cases of measles that they were using to scare people to get vaccinated, they were actually caused or related to the vaccine. That means that the people that caught those diseases either got the vaccine and then got measles from the vaccine itself, or they were exposed to measles through somebody else that was recently vaccinated, and it spread from that vaccinated person to them. So that's 37%.
That's
related
huge.
To the vaccine itself. So they're not telling us that this is what's taking place.
Right, and we need that kind of information, and we need to dive deeper so we can come with some solutions. One thing I want to mention before we go, the flu shot, and we've only got about 5 minutes left, so we'll hurry, but on that pertussis, on the whooping cough, we didn't mention the cocooning or the asymptomatic spread. So adults get the shot. They won't get symptoms of whooping cough, but they'll actually be shedding and spreading that virus even to their little grandkids because they think they're protected.
Yeah. I get calls all the time from grandparents that say, my daughter just had a child. That's my grandchild. And I want to go see my grandchild. I want to go hug my grandchild. But my daughter says that her doctor says that I have to get a vaccine. The doctors are telling pregnant women, don't let your parents or anyone else come and hold your baby when the baby's born, unless they get a pertussis vaccine. They call this cocooning. Okay, it means that when the baby's born, they believe the baby is vulnerable to pertussis, and so they want everybody that comes into contact with that infant to be vaccinated against pertussis. But the studies, the actual studies, show that cocooning doesn't work. It not only doesn't work, it actually presents a greater danger to the baby because the people that are getting the vaccine are carriers of the disease. I summarize these studies in my book, Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies. Yeah. I summarize studies that show that when people get that, when you get that pertussis vaccine, you carry, you're a carrier of that disease, and you can spread that disease to other people, vaccinated and unvaccinated people. So the vaccine itself is partly responsible for the spread of the disease itself, and cocooning isn't effective, and yet they continue to recommend it when it may actually be a more dangerous practice for the infant than if you never did it. Went along with those recommendations.
Yeah, once again, man's wisdom comes in, and it turns out maybe it's not as good as the original version of how it was intended to handle these
And the other
diseases.
Thing I just wanted to mention, I know we don't have much time, but one of my favorite chapters in the book is a chapter called Cancer and Natural Infections.
Yep, chapter 19.
There are numerous studies that show that when you contract these diseases in childhood, these childhood diseases like measles, mumps, rubella, okay, chickenpox, when you get these diseases in childhood, they actually have protective benefits against various types of cancer in later life. So these vaccines are actually, these diseases actually serve very valuable functions during childhood. In fact, there's a large Japanese study that that recently looked at over 100,000 adult men and women of elderly age, and then they looked back at their history of contracting these childhood diseases, and what they discovered is that when you contract measles, mumps, chickenpox, you are statistically significantly protected in later life against fatal heart attacks and strokes. So when you catch these diseases in childhood, they are protective against various types of cancer, heart attacks, and strokes in later life. And that's something that we just need to realize, that we shouldn't be afraid of these diseases necessarily. We have to respect them, but there's different ways that we have to deal with them. Okay, like for example, with measles, the World Health Organization conducted a study, several studies actually, showing that high doses of vitamin A is very protective against complications and fatalities associated with measles, especially in third world countries where fatality rates can be particularly high with measles due to things like malnutrition. But we don't have those same problems in first world nations, even though they're scaring us about this. But I do have to say that measles is a relatively potentially dangerous problem, again, even in first world nations today, because after 60 years of vaccination, because that measles vaccine came out in 1963, after 60 years of vaccination and over-vaccination with the measles vaccine, they've recreated what I call a virgin population, where we are no longer protected naturally against measles by having contracted it, and so it's reverted back to becoming a very potentially dangerous disease, and that's something that they created with their own medical recommendations for this vaccine on a regular basis.
Yeah, kind of like when the Europeans came over to the Native American population and it was a virgin, they'd never been exposed to some of these germs. That's exactly what we're creating again. So,
Exactly, and once you're exposed, you see, that's what happens. When a new disease hits a virgin population, fatality rates can be pretty high, maybe 5%, 10%, something like that. But once the population has been exposed, those rates go down. Diseases don't want to kill their host, generally speaking.
Right.
For example, Ebola is not a very intelligent microorganism because it's too effective at killing its host, so it doesn't have a long enough time to repopulate.
Right.
Most diseases, that's what they you know, that's why most diseases evolve to, you know, you'll get sick and whatnot and overcome it over time. The fatality rates will drop. But with measles, they've created a virgin population again in all of these first world nations, and so it is a dangerous disease again, and now there's a huge dilemma on how to deal with it.
Right. Well, and the evidence is clear. It's more about the terrain than the bugs. So sanitation and malnutrition were the two biggest drivers of a lot of these germ overgrowth epidemics. So first world countries, although, you know, I tell my patients all the time, you're highly nourished with calories, but your micronutrient density of the food is so low that you're still malnourished if you're eating a standard American diet. So all the more reason to eat real food, nourish your terrain, get some good sunlight, exercise, the basics, the very basic things that keep your immune system strong.
But I want to point out that nutrition is not going to stop you from getting measles. And I don't believe you want to stop people from getting measles.
Right.
Okay. But nutrition will protect you from the complications and death that's associated with measles.
Right.
That's an important distinction that needs to be made. Measles is so transmissible that you'll get that no matter what your nutritional status is. The idea is you want to have a strong nutritional foundation so that when you do contract diseases such as measles, that you'll simply pass through that disease without these more serious complications.
Yeah, and we've interviewed Tom Cowan before, where he talks about in his book the beneficial aspects of getting these germs in you and having the immune response and the fever spike, and then you kill the bug, and then you go on and live your life like everyone used to do with measles. The Brady Bunch comes to mind, that episode where they all got the measles. We all used to get chicken pox. So, and then there's potential, or not potential, the studies show clearly there's benefit in regards to decreased cancer, heart attack, and stroke rates when you get some of these. So there's way more to this whole vaccine thing than what most people understand, and definitely than what you're hearing on typical media outlets. So that's why I highly recommend. We didn't have time to get into the flu shot. That's probably a whole different show. But bottom line, it's in the book. Efficacy, does it work? And harm, can it potentially harm you in any way? So get educated, get informed, get Neil Miller's book. His co-author is Gary Goldman, PhD. The name of the book is Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies, and the website thinktwice.com. And that's Neil Miller. Neil, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for all your hard work. I know this is not a topic or a field that where you probably get a whole lot of praise from many people in the public eye, but you're doing a great service to a lot of families and a lot of patients out there. So thank you for all you've done.
And thank you for being aware of the problems and sharing your information as well.
You're welcome. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that's it. You're the Cure. Ben Edwards, VeritasMedical.com for all the archive shows, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Dr. Edwards. Appreciate it. Stick around. We got plenty to go.